Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Being Human. With special guest, Morgan Garrity.
Welcome back, everyone, to a very special episode of Totoro Talk.
Wait a minute.
That's right.
Wait just
That's
a
right,
minute.
Folks. This week we are talking about the one and only John Turturro in the motion picture Being Human. Joined by Stuart Elmore.
Is this the Transformers music?
Morgan Garrity. And of course,
I feel like,
John Turturro.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to turn down.
My whole life for this moment.
Turn down the headphone mixes here. I feel like that moment in Transformers 1 when Don Turturro gets like pissed on by Bumblebee. It's like, hey, what's going on?
Did you
on
like
here?
The music flow?
That was good.
I went with his music from Big Lebowski, segued into just Transformers blasting.
Did you have Michael Van Bodega Smith make that?
No, I pressed the button on Spotify.
Oh, it's just a song.
Yeah, I just pressed the song on Spotify, and then I had my finger hover over Soxent Attack from Transformers. And pressed
very
it the
good.
Second.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
But yeah, we're fuck Robin Williams. We're talking about John.
No, it's such a fun performance. I think the best part of this whole
film. He's undoubtedly the best part of this movie.
Absolutely.
As he frequently is in most movies.
That's how it be sometimes.
Yeah.
With the toots.
Thank you all so much for joining us.
Are you Totoro-ly enough for the Totoro Club?
I wasn't expecting this to be full Totoro. Like, I don't know. Like, I have a little bit of Totoro to talk about, but not like...
Are you
just a touch
are
of Totoro?
Just a touch of Totoro?
I'm like just
are
a touch
Totoro-ly
of Totoro.
Are you Totoro-ly enough for the Totoro Club?
Oh my God.
Good. Hey, I'm going to shake your hand for that one.
They shot that scene on 9/11.
It's like one of the... It's one of the all-time... like
no!
It's like one of the all-time like IMDb trivia facts that I don't know if it's real or not.
I choose to believe.
I choose to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, that probably didn't actually happen. But I'm like, you know what? Who cares?
Who cares?
I believe that it did.
That's my truth.
Stuart, the story is that they filmed the Turtly Enough for the Turtle Club sequence.
On 9/11.
On 9/11 and right. In the full turtle costume, they took a moment of silence.
Before they started shooting.
No.
Yep. It's like,
no.
Like I said, it's too perfect to like to not to like be true.
Oh my
and
God.
And yet at the same time, I choose to
oh
believe
Oh my
it.
God.
I think it says so much about the industry.
Yeah.
And the way time restraints function, where it's
yes.
like, we're not stopping for 9/11.
We have to.
We only have the turtle costume today.
We have 30 seconds of silence that we can. They should remake Masters, guys, but with John Turturro as
okay.
The Dana Carvey character.
Listening.
And
all
he,
right.
He can just be the Turturro-ly. I'm trying to like fit Turtly and Turturro into the same word.
You're doing a good job.
It's
yeah,
not
honestly,
working,
impressed.
But like I have to.
Turtleist.
Are you guys ready to talk about the worst Robin Williams hairdo in all
Ooh.
Of his movies?
The way that it comes back, I'm assuming you're talking about the Roman
yeah.
slave
oh,
haircut.
Yeah.
And it comes back when he's in his later form as like the Brooklyn guy. Briefly,
yeah.
when he's on the beach, you can see the line again.
Like they just filmed it like that
it
same
away.
Day.
Put it away. I don't want to see that again.
It's so bad. But you can say thank you all for joining us for this week's episode on Being Human. Thank you for listening to last week's episode, Mrs. Doubtfire.
How did that one go?
Hello!
Where we talked for 19 hours
the most
Sam
depraved
Kelly.
Movie ever made.
Yeah. I have so much to say about
I
that.
I have a lot of thoughts. Or I had a lot of thoughts.
Because we've already recorded the
yes.
episode.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There's a lot to say about this movie.
Is there?
I think there kind of is.
Hmm.
But Morgan, I want to know why you're here for this one.
I'm pretty sure I just selected at random. It was one that I hadn't seen and I knew about and had no desire to see before this podcast existence. So I was like, why not push myself?
Gotcha.
Why not just do it?
Experience something new. It's directed by someone of like reasonable reputation.
Yeah. I actually was unfamiliar with Forsythe's work before it, too.
I feel like Local Hero is kind of like his like movie that kind of broke through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not like, you know, top like S tier director or anything, but he's like someone who like, I was like, oh, this is a guy who's done things.
This
like,
is a guy for sure. Definitely a guy.
And this movie is it's borderline not a thing.
I was reading online that there is a Forsythe cut that is 40 minutes longer than what we got. And jaw unhinged the moment I read that. What is that movie?
And the thing is, it's like, so I heard that when he showed this to, I think it was Warner Brothers who funded
I'm
this movie,
this now.
That they first asked him to cut the movie down because it was 2 hours and almost like three.
Jeez.
I mean, this movie is 2 hours long.
They added the narration?
They added the narration.
The narration was not intended?
No, yeah, and correct. You can tell, though. You can tell.
I was like, this is the most like sloppy narration. This is like Harrison Ford Blade Runner style narration where he's like trying to nuke the movie.
Yeah. That's what it felt like. I was like, who is this woman? We never see her face. We never understand her part in the story. Yeah.
Oh my God. That explains so much why this movie is so disjointed. Is this missing 40 minutes and there's forced narration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Back in 2019, I was a Blade Runner.
Oh brother, this guy stinks.
There it is.
Every time I like, we will talk about this movie, but anytime I think about like how like they're like, yeah, he tried to intentionally nuke the narration in Blade Runner so they wouldn't use it, I'm like, well, it's not, it can't be as bad as I remember, right? And then I watch a clip and he's just like, yeah, so what we did was we went over and we found the replica. I'm like, whoa. Anyway.
Yeah, I was watching the movie with my partner in the room last night and he stopped at one point and was like, this is like Blade Runner, isn't it? Like without any context of the film. I was like, that's hilarious.
He nailed it on the head.
Absolutely.
The narration is disastrous.
It's so.
I must apologize. I typed in Being Human on IMDb and the BBC 2008 TV show.
Yeah, having to specify.
That's the first thing I have of my two main things I have to talk about. Similar rating to my wife for this is that she is currently watching the BBC Being Human show.
Is it good?
The one with Sam Witwer.
Yeah.
She was apparently a huge fan of it back when she was like, you know, a preteen.
So
she was like, yeah, I watched the whole thing, and you know, just summer I'm not doing anything, I'm home alone for most of the day, so I've just been rewatching it.
Cute.
And so it was very funny that I had to also watch Being Human but a different one.
Very
simultaneous
different. Very different vibes.
And like my TV is on a floor directly below the like desk that she sits at, so we were like 5 feet apart watching two different Being Humans. The whole range of the human experience.
Truly. The TV show's a vampire story.
I believe so.
Yes. I love vampire stories.
Which is, you know, kind of a misnomer. It should be called being vampiric, right?
They're trying their best to be human, though. Yeah, I think it's a, you know, planned masking.
They're like, yeah, you know, we're really trying out here.
I was going to correct my search for the 1994 Being Human, but as you're all talking about it, now I'm going to go into. And a werewolf and a ghost?
And a ghost?
What?
And
it
a
keeps
ghost?
Getting cooler.
Wait a minute.
We should have just done that.
Is this like they tried to make Underworld the TV show where
Sure, you should have just watched that movie.
Can we talk about Underworld for a minute?
Show. Underworld?
Yeah.
I've never seen Underworld.
I've never seen it either.
None of them?
But you can talk about it.
Speak on this. Speak on your truth.
Well, now it's not going to be as like interesting because I'm the only one who's seen Underworld Evolutions, Underworld Rise of Lycans, Underworld Awakenings.
Was that all?
I didn't realize there was that many. Rise of Lycans. Let's go.
Underworld Blood Wars.
I have not seen. I have not seen Underworld Blood Wars. Where they add Theo James into it. I mean, the first two Underworlds aren't awful. They're not good.
That you didn't take time to look at Theo James. Sorry, I should not objectify beautiful men.
Yeah. I think he plays like a lichen mutant or something in the third or the fourth one. Or who is the? There's like a in the Underworld Awakenings. They have like a guy who like. Okay, Underworld corner here. This takes place in a universe where there's just regular vampires. But the werewolves aren't like what we know as werewolves. Cause there's like there's like the main vampire guy who like is like the first vampire, but the first werewolf is just like a perpetual werewolf. They don't turn back into humans.
Oh.
And so when that werewolf like bites other people, they just turn into werewolves and they stay that way. It isn't until later in the canonic history that there is like a werewolf human hybrid that they turn that coin as a lichen. And that's that is the titular werewolf we know as in modern cultural lore and all that stuff.
This looks great. That is the screenplay that was written by Danny McBride as well.
What?
Yeah. I mean, he loves this lore. But yeah, he is the top credited writer for the Rise of the Lichens film. That's so sick.
Danny McBride's writing.
Theo James is not the mutant werewolf in Underworld Awakenings. I am mistaken on that one. That is actually Chris Holden. Chris Holden Reed is plays Quint. That's the guy. But he turns into a lichen that's like 10 feet tall.
That's so sick.
It's kind of cool, actually. Yeah, Underworld Corner. We got to that because we were talking about Being Human, the BBC TV show, which had a vampire, werewolf, and a ghost living together, which is not the same Being Human that we're gathered here to talk about today.
We could just completely divert into... what if we just vampire talked content? Yeah,
we just like read vampires.
I am scrouging my papers around. Be like, oh shit! I do not
hate,
ready for this.
I do hate. We do have to like get into this just so we can talk to Turo.
That's
for real.
That's true and fair.
Right.
The only other bit of trivia that I had about this movie is that I went to go visit my wife's uncle in London last year, and he was like, "What are you doing with your free time?" And I'm like, "Well, funny you asked. I host this podcast about Robin Williams."
Cute.
With my good buddy Stuart, and he was like, "Oh, you know this like place that I lived at for a little bit. They shot a Robin Williams movie there." And he's like, "I couldn't remember the name of it, but he was like, it was by the guy who did Local Hero." And then I had quite forgotten that he told me this.
Wait, is Bill Forsyth like a name in England?
He's like a Scottish, upper tier Scottish filmmaker.
Got it.
He's never really broken through to the larger world. Yeah. Like for Scotland, he's pretty big.
Okay. Gotcha.
That was really the extent of what he's just like, yeah, they shot, everyone said he was really nice. They shot it at this place and we saw it happen every day.
Nice. Wow.
Was this the caveman arc story?
A lot of them might've been shot in the same place.
It does feel like they like had a 3-mile stretch of beach and they're
straight
just
up.
Like,
yeah,
we will move a mile down the beach for each
from
sequence.
Sandy beach to rocky beach to wooded beach.
Like they picked a really good, or they picked like an island and just like kind of like
every Peter one Jackson of these way.
Does at some form involve a beach.
True.
Except for the Robin, or like the last one, because he's in New York City.
Yeah.
They go to the beach house. That's right.
They go to the beach house, but there's always, they keep going back to the river, but they're always at this open body of water, which threw me off. And then he crosses the river again. It's like, nah, we're at a beach. Yeah. That's like an ocean.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
If he winds up in like Africa. He's like, what's going on here?
Because like the one, are they, what's the one where they're like stranded on like a beach? And it's like Renaissance looking outfits. What? I don't know what that one was about. Were they
that is where I Dutch explorers to fully or fall apart?
Whoa.
Oh my goodness.
It's a spam
I
call.
I immediately thought it was my phone.
So I'm getting the telemarketers have been going popping off the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
They have been going a little crazy.
Yeah. It's the information that leaked to everybody.
Yeah.
And
it's a thing where it's like, you guys, like pretty much everybody's social security numbers are just like
they're
on the
out
web.
There somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should both say yours first and then I'll say mine third.
Yeah, so we just did it.
Being Human.
Rank your favorite supporting performance.
Okay,
three supporting performances in Being Human.
I mean, that aren't John Turturro.
I got to start with Ewan McGregor's debut
so
role.
Fun.
Have
so
one
fun
line.
To see his face.
Yeah, he has one line, but...
He's like, I'll do it. And you're like, all right, cool.
Okay, yeah, he's got it. He seems good.
He looks out into the ocean. He's like... It's a bunch of sea otters out there.
All right. So I do just want to say, I watched this movie. I'd like to emphasize this. I watched this whole ass movie.
Good.
I paid attention during this movie.
I was about 50% in.
I paid attention during this movie.
About the same as me.
Mm-hmm.
After I finished watching the movie, I check online. I see third billed Bill Nighy.
Okay.
Where was he in this movie?
That's a good question. I had the same thought. Yes.
Because I was like, I was almost kind of worried to bring that up at the table because this has happened before, Morgan, where it's like, wait, that guy was in the movie? And everyone at the table like scolds me. It's like, yeah, it was at that scene in the movie. I'm like, well, I didn't pay attention. Mm-hmm. So then I saw the name Bill Nighy. I'm like, oh shit, was I just not paying attention? I missed the Bill Nighy scene altogether. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad to hear today that we're all on the same page of where the fuck was Bill Nighy in this movie. Mm-hmm. Are you looking?
Third build.
I mean, he was a big name at the time. Honestly, as soon as I saw Lorraine Bracco's name pop up in the opening credits,
oh my God.
I was just counting down the seconds, and it took so long.
You didn't deliver the flowers.
You didn't deliver the flowers.
And then she just doesn't appear again.
Yeah, but the moment we got was very nice.
Because I'm Googling Bill Nighy being human.
I'm
finding no images of him in the movie. Is this like a psyop?
It's a tax write-off for him. He was laundering.
Had to have been.
Because they're all pictures of like them on the beach. Or
which
well,
one?
All of them are on the beach.
Which
the
one?
The one where they're like the Portuguese.
So he's in that chunk of it?
But the thing is, that's where all the pictures are, but there's no images of him.
Maybe he's like in
He plays a character named Julian.
I think if you go on IMDb, Roman. It's in like appearance order, thank God. But where he is, I think he is one of the Roman guys.
Deeply confusing actors in this movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, here is the supporting cast list in case you guys have forgotten, and then we're going to pick our favorites. It is John Turturro as Lucinius, Bill Nighy as Julian, Vincent D'Onofrio as the priest, Robert Carlyle as the prehistoric shaman, Simon McBurney as Hermes, Hector Elizondo as Dom Paula, William H. Macy as Boris, Lorraine Bracco as Anna. And that's really the extent of like the notable ones.
Mm-hmm. Was this just a thing where it was like Bill Forsyth was trying to like it wasn't a blank check movie, right?
I would earnestly say that
it was his fourth film after like a pretty solid three run.
Okay.
From what I understand, but I haven't seen any.
I would say this is probably about as close as a guy of his caliber gets to a blank check movie. Mm-hmm.
$40 million budget for this kind of a script. Kind of feels pretty blank checky. Like it's like, yeah, sure. You want to make a movie about some dudes looking sad on a beach. Great.
Have fun with that.
But then in terms of the cast, I'm thinking it's like, was he of at least some kind of reputable status that like actors were like, yeah, I want to do like a Bill Forsyth film. And that's how they got these people.
I think he had like a reputation as like a pretty well-respected Scottish director who like a local hero had been a like minor key like success. And I think that especially in this era of Hollywood, like those are the kind of directors you're like, I want to get some, you know, rep points. I'm going to work with this guy.
Get me on that set.
Yeah. Right. Get me on that set. I'll do Lorraine Bracco. I'll do a day on a Bill
Forsyth
movie.
That's the whole thing. It is like one day or like 2 weeks for a lot of these actors.
Hector Elizondo probably on set for like 4 days.
Yeah.
He's sitting in like a chair.
It feels like he called in a lot of favors.
Yeah.
Call in a favor script.
That's kind of where I'm like leaning on with this. It's like, this seems like, you know, again, he's given a decent sizable budget. This is sort of his blank check movie and he's calling on a lot of favors of folks. Robin Williams, though, like I know Robin is like half Scottish, I think. Don't quote me on that one, but I know he has a lot of Scottish heritage. And watching this, especially like in the Scottish part of the movie, I was like, okay, I wonder if this is just like Robin, like, I want to work with a Scottish director. Like, I've never done that, and you know, I'm part Scottish and good stuff.
Do it again.
Sure. I don't.
Stuart.
I'm 20%
Stuart.
Scottish and I still can't do a good.
Stuart. Do it.
No. I'm chickening out of that one. Sorry.
It's okay.
All right, so we're going
to
talk the rest of this, right?
Scotland, it's fine.
We're going to talk about the rest of this, right?
I had a choir director once tell me, it's like, if you're talking to Scottish accent and, you know, you do what you think is good in Scottish with the elongated vowels, and then when you want to transfer to Irish, you talk with the Scottish accent, but you just grit your teeth. And
that's exactly it.
And I was like, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. All right, so. All the Irish people just like...
We've lost all of our Irish
I'm right
viewership.
Here. I'm here for representation as the local kind of Irish person. It's okay. Just keep, wait. Just wait a little bit longer. It'll be over soon.
I have the a comic. I have the Irish forehead. So I'm representing at this moment in time.
What is the Irish forehead?
Just
I don't
that
know.
It's big.
It's a landing
My brother
strip.
Does have
it's
a like really a, big forehead. So that makes
yeah,
sense.
It would happen. Anyway.
Sorry if my brother listens to this.
But this movie covers a lot of nationalities.
Morgan's brother, check yourself.
I have three of them. They have to figure out which one it is.
Yeah. I like the challenge.
Exactly.
Make them fight for it.
Yeah.
What's the strategy to tackling this? Do we just like kind of just talk for a little bit or do we?
So I do have a question as somebody who is not going through the entirety of Robin Williams's career and up to this point in particular. But what do you think was going through his mind when he said, I'm going to take on this serious role without a single bit part and it's going to drone on? Like, what do you think his choice was?
So Robin's sort of motif in this period of time when it comes to like movies, he's very much like a two for them, one for me kind of a guy.
Interesting.
At this point, he's his wife, Marcia, they've just started a production company together where they help like produce movies. We talked about this a little bit last week on Doubtfire that those two were like producing duos on that movie.
Cute.
And with that being said, and Marcia, who has kind of always been like his... like right hand person along with his acting choices and career picks, and I think she's very smart in the way of like she knows what roles are catered to Robin and what roles are not, but she knows how to like kind of give Robin an inch so you can like give him one movie he really wants to do for fun so he signs up for three movies you know are going to be very successful.
Do you think Doubtfire was the fun movie?
Oh,
in this case, okay,
absolutely. Yeah. Like, right. And Robin wanted to do Doubtfire. I'm not saying like he didn't want to do Doubtfire and he got pushed into that one, but I think it was more like it's no accident that it's like we get Aladdin, Toys, Doubtfire, and then Being Human, three movies that are like kind of like all catered to Robin's persona, and then we get Being Human, which is like what the hell is
what the hell's going on?
It's like what's going on with this one, and this will happen again later on as we get to. Some of his later works, the only problem that we're going to start getting to is rather than it being three for them, one for me, it then starts to become two for them, one for me. Mm-hmm. And then it's, I just get to pick. Oh my God.
I like that you're connected. So we all get to hear this.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're so popular.
No, the problem, I know how to solve this.
I think the thing about this movie is that Robin, like, in addition to his success as a movie star at this point, he has a genuine interest in like, helping directors fulfill their kind of grander, ambitious stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think he also yearns for that like legitimacy in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Oscar nom.
Yeah.
Even like less of the Oscar nom, more just like, I think he wants to be seen as, you know,
a real actor.
Yeah. In addition to his other work, he's like trying to have a foot in both areas.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's crazy to see that now after he's off of three nominations already. But no
I still
trophy.
Think like after you've done a run of like Aladdin, Doubtfire, Toys, Ferngully, Hook, like you want to like reel it back towards, okay, I'm going to prove that I'm a serious actor with a real director who's doing, you know, his passion project and I can be the rubber stamp for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because he's done this before where he's like jumped in to help out like a director fulfill their passion project. Fisher King, Baron Munchausen for Terry Gilliam.
Oh, yeah.
He later, like, I would say Bicentennial Man is kind of like the apex of this arc of his career.
Makes sense. Yeah.
That more or less ends this, like, run of his career as this rubber stamp, you know, yearning for legitimacy.
Yeah.
There's a sweetness to that. I get that.
No, I think I don't say, like, yearning for legitimacy and, like, a slight against him. I do think, like, he just has this, you know, interest in entertaining as well as, like, you know, having that he's an artist. He wants to, you know, push for that real, you know, the human stuff to, you know, use the name of this movie.
Do we feel like he accomplished that?
No, not in the slightest.
Not at all. Not right? Okay.
I think much like Bicentennial Man down the line, he flew a little too close to the sun.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Bicentennial Man?
Not since I was very young.
Y'all know what he looks like in that? Because I just looked at the picture and I was chuckling to myself.
Woo!
I was chuckling to myself.
Yep.
The thing about Being Human is that I'm watching it. Have you guys ever been to Epcot in Disney in Florida?
Not in a while.
Okay, I'm watching this movie and I'm like, This is the most Epcot ass movie I've ever seen in my life. And there's like this mural that they have in Epcot. It's like one of the more insane looking things I've seen. And this movie is like this mural from Epcot, where okay. it's like the ancient cavemen like pointing yeah. to the stars and then like the spaceship flying by.
Yeah, like the history of man, like yeah. what we're capable of doing.
Yeah.
We're still horrible fathers.
Yeah, still horrible fathers. Yeah.
Consistently
we,
through time.
We keep going to space instead of connecting with our kids. But cough, I just kept feeling this is like
Interstellar.
Epcot the movie. And mm-hmm. I just kept thinking that watching that. In the sense that it's like really treacly, and not no diss to Epcot. This is more about this movie than Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great the website formerly known as Twitter account called Epcot Center where they would just post like the Moroccan experience show has shut down due to like an attack or something. They just post like crazy things that would happen at Epcot.
Crazy stuff goes down there. You can drink yeah. there.
You can drink there.
You open a lot of doors.
And then you go to the UK or you go to the Canada Pavilion and there's like a guy vomiting in a trash can.
That's
you're like
right.
Disney magic, baby.
That's Disney yeah. magic.
Hmm. But this movie, like it's attempting this grand scale of being like the human experience is within all of us.
Mm-hmm. And we can change through I'm every just version of ourselves.
Well, like as you were talking, like I was sort of seeing like when we opened with like the caveman bit. And I thought, okay, is this going to get like 2001-y where like they're going to like throw a bone in the sky and it turns into a spaceship? Like I'm mm-hmm.
No,
waiting.
He just falls asleep but, at the end of each one.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like,
yeah. And that's just, what I wanted to do too.
He fails his family. He falls asleep. He wakes up and then we're on the next bit of he's failing his family
mm-hmm.
and then he wakes up. And then he's failing his family. Like I get it. I get the idea.
He gets a little bit better each time.
Each time, yeah.
Have you guys seen Cloud Atlas?
No.
That's also what my partner said verbatim.
Okay.
Yeah, y'all should talk about it. He should be here right now.
Yeah, get him in here.
But he was like, you should just watch Cloud Atlas now as soon as the movie was over. And I was like, hell no. I don't have the emotional bandwidth for that.
For Cloud Atlas. So you haven't seen Cloud Atlas?
I have not seen Cloud Atlas.
But Morgan, have you seen it?
I haven't.
Okay. Cloud Atlas is like... of is like basically a messy masterpiece. Mm-hmm. It's the Wachowskis. It's like they made it in 2012. It's like Tom Hanks and Halle Berry, Hugh Grant. Great cast. It's the exact same premise as this in a sense mm-hmm. where it's like six different storylines mm-hmm. across the breadth of human history and how like these same six souls exist in all of them and how they change over time.
Mm.
It's like in the first one, Tom Hanks is like the villain.
Mm-hmm.
But then the last one's like how his soul over the core arc of human history has become kind.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't he play the devil? Is that a thing?
Hugh Grant plays the devil.
Oh, okay.
Or not Hugh Grant. Sorry, Hugo Weaving.
Mm.
Hugo Weaving is like the force of evil in every iteration yes. of history.
Yeah, yeah. Hugh Grant's also in the film. So, yeah.
I forget who Hugh Grant plays. But anyway, the movies, I quite like it a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like really ambitious and fascinating and messy, but in like a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched this movie and this is like low effort Cloud Atlas.
Yeah. It was a book first, mm-hmm. right? I don't know when the book was published, so it could have been inspired by it. There is something that I do like about literally the human nature of it, which is a father who keeps making the same mistake yeah. over and over again. And there's something that is like thoughtful in that. And like the slow pace of change.
Yeah.
But it's not, there's nothing that like really drives that point home. And yeah. I don't think 40 additional minutes in this film could have done that.
Because to your point, like if this movie is about like the slow pace of change across, you know, his many lives, ultimately you do have to feel that sense of change through like mm-hmm. the various periods, as slow as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to feel him getting like a step further towards it each time.
Mm-hmm.
And instead it's like he gets the same point in every one and fails.
Mm-hmm.
And like you need every like 1,000 years that you're jumping, like he gets a little further and closer to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's like, all right, and then the last one is like, oh, he talks to his kids and they're fine.
And they did it.
He just brought him to a beach house and was like, hey,
talked about the meaning of life.
You know, what's life all about? And they looked at the stars.
Yep.
When we were talking about like the changes Warner Brothers wanted to make, one of those. And this is at least mentioned in the IMDb trivia and Wikipedia. So whether this is true or not, but in addition to trimming 40 minutes, adding the voiceover, they also mentioned adding a happy ending.
Yes.
Mm.
So then when we talk about that Forsyth cut, it's like, I'm wondering if like there was an ending in the movie where like he never quite gets there, learns the lesson. Like it's yet just another step in the right direction, but never fully like.
I will be atoning. So serious. If this movie ends with him failing again, that recontextualizes the whole thing.
That's a good point.
And that, I don't know if it makes it better.
Is it just a failed soul at that point?
Yeah, it's just like you're watching the same failed soul across eons. You never be able to achieve.
That's so depressing.
That's a depressing thing. Right. But at least there's like a point there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people are just failures.
Yeah. Some people just suck and you'll never succeed no matter how many lives. Like that. That's like such a bummer. But like.
I suck in every lifetime, don't I?
Or it's just like.
What's that movie where it's like in every lifetime I would find you? Or
yeah.
Something.
Like I said, The Time Traveler's Wife. Is that the one like, I'll find you in every lifetime or something?
Sorry. For some reason, I was thinking of the Gary Oldman, Bram Stoker's Dracula. I crossed oceans of time to find you.
Or like the Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like I would rather have spent time, you know, washing dishes with you, except it's like I would rather have, you know, just sucked in
still
this
not
life.
Talk still to
have,
my kids still, in this life.
In every iteration I still don't, you know, connect with my child who's you know gonna ruin the world with whatever her evil name becomes.
We were talking about like sort of what does that mean if it's sort of a depressing ending. For me it almost recontextualized in a way of like Bill Forsyth trying to say it's like no, it's not the point of which is not to say that As your soul kind of like reincarnates throughout time and reattempts at these sort of relationships you're trying to mend. And were you trying to play something? Okay.
I wasn't.
I just heard something. It's like you were halfway committing.
I accidentally lost something.
Oh, okay. But that the point of which is like each lifetime, though we may not fully succeed, the point of which is not to try to fully succeed, but just get slowly better and better. And it's through these eons of time that you can see these physical changes happening. Still pretty depressing, but I also don't think it would fix the movie for me as well.
I don't know if there's like fixing this movie without like almost like a ground level restructuring. Because it's just like, each of these stories by themselves are uncompelling.
That's true.
And he is uncompelling in them.
It's like Robin Williams, I think, is the first part of this problem. I just don't buy Robin Williams as being like these five distinct characters that deep down have like the same essence. Is that's like kind of what the movie's trying to say. It's like, oh, it's the same guy.
He's still bumbling.
He seems out of his depth in this movie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tremendously.
Absolutely.
He seems very lost in the sauce.
I
don't know what he was trying to accomplish from the gun as the caveman too.
Like
something about the language, because they're utilizing words that like make sense. He's like, no noise, be quiet. And then like using symbols and then only saying mine. Like there's something about that whole performance that immediately put it off for me and I couldn't get back in.
It's not convincing that like we're starting from this very primitive place. To me, it seems this could be like a very tribalistic society next to a Walmart.
Exactly.
Feel like, I'd say it's not even so much like on the performance as it is just on like the costuming.
Yeah, just the design
and like vibes.
And the fact that they are talking in English. If they were just, I don't know, using some kind of more primitive language just no language at all.
I have no problem with this movie. Using English for all these iterations. I think like if you're going to tell this story, like that's fine. You can do that. Something I'm almost more curious about is is this movie better if it's a different actor in each one, but it's the same soul? Is that better?
I think it could have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
they're
like,
already changing actors for the other souls.
Yeah.
Right.
Well.
Yeah. I don't know.
At that point, I'm just splitting hairs, but like,
or just get a really, really good actor who can do
a much
these,
better actor.
I don't even want to say better actors. Robin is capable of doing this, but he just you need a better grasp on the material and a director who can. It's clear that his Robin's style of performing is not compatible with Bill Forsyth's style of directing. Even if they got along great on set, they might have loved each other. They're not simpatico. It's not working.
Yeah.
Or they didn't prep enough. Wasn't enough conversation going in, and then he shows up in Scotland, and that's all he had to give. Yeah. Sort of what it feels like.
Here's your beard. Here's your wig. Here's your costume. And these are the lines. And that's it.
And we're giving, like, you a bad haircut right now.
We're fucking that shit up.
Yeah. We're fucking that shit up.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, the Roman haircut. Oh, man.
Yep. I also cut my bangs in college. It happens.
This is the best one. Morgan, what's your, like, history with Robin Williams?
My personal history?
Yeah, because a lot of guests we bring on didn't know. Mr. Shot, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. No spoilers. But I feel like a lot of the guests we bring on the show, like, have a certain, like, history with his screen persona.
Interesting.
Because, like, he went through so many different eras of his career.
Yeah.
Like the family, some people grew up with his comedy. Some people mostly just knew him as the genie.
Interesting.
Some people, like, we brought my dad on, and he was really into, like, his early, you know, comedy run, how that fed into Good Morning Vietnam, which is the movie we had him on for.
I love that movie.
Do you have, like, a kind of a history with Robin Williams as a performer?
I sound like your dad, but my dad loved Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
And my dad showed me all of his early comedies first. Yeah. So that was sort of my introduction. I think Patch Adams was my first movie.
Mm-hmm.
My dad loves a good slapstick comedy. Yeah. He showed it to us when we were kids. Mm-hmm. So I definitely am coming in from his comedy standpoint.
Yeah.
My dad
yeah.
also listened to a lot of George Carlin growing up. Mm-hmm. So naturally segued into yeah. Robin Williams stand up.
Yeah.
So that's my angle, which is why I also wanted to do Death to Smoochie. I'm like, yes. that is, like, an exciting one for me.
Death to Smoochie.
The sequel.
We should call it. They should make another one. To Death to Smoochie.
Yeah.
But that's my angle. And I think serious Robin Williams works for me in films like Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mess with that big time.
Yeah.
But
Good Will Hunting, Dead Poets.
Yes.
There are other
Moscow Fisher on King. The Hudson, no. Fisher King.
Moscow.
What?
That's, like, a little, whatever. I would include Moscow on the Hudson.
You're walking back a little bit on that.
No, he's good. He's good in it. No, it's a good movie. He's good in it.
I
wouldn't hold it up to, like,
I think Moscow on the Hudson is still, like, the movie that, like, in 2025, people need to watch that movie.
That's the conclusion we said.
It's like, the subject matter of that movie, like, obviously changes throughout different yeah. periods of time, but, like, I think in today's climate, like, people need to watch Moscow on the
yeah,
Hudson.
The Russians are not all evil.
It's just that, like, have you seen Moscow on the Hudson, Morgan?
I have not.
Moscow to Hudson.
No, almost, like, you could make the case that, like, nobody in that movie is, like every character in that movie is an immigrant. Like, everybody. Coming from different, like, places, they all have different immigrant stories, and it's immigrants helping other immigrants, and it's all about, like, sort of, it is, like, the joy of becoming an American put into a movie from an immigrant standpoint. And that is, like, a movie that's got, like, so many good golden gems of scenes in that movie. Like,
that sounds really important.
People can make the case of, like, does the overarching storyline work, which is kind of like Robin sort of figuring out what kind of a, like, I don't know, it sort of balances between, like, am I Russian, am I American, am I both, like,
it's a very good movie about the immigrant experience. And Robin's very good in it. The only point I was making is that
it's a serious role.
Is a serious role, but if we're talking, like, his S-tier,
dramatic works, or
I would not include it in, like that.
I put
Moscow in S-tier. I'm just saying. I think
you're allowed to have different opinions.
Listen, Spielberg said
I'm just doing it with every word you say now.
That Moscow on the Hudson was no fluke. He wrote that after
we'll
Hook.
Watch that. I feel like that movie is more important.
Morgan,
now
do
than
you like Hook?
Before. I love Hook. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
I watched that later in life. Like, my earlier introductions were more of his crass comedy because my dad had no boundaries.
That's very good.
Yeah.
It's I'm glad you like said that by coming in from the Mork and Mindy stuff.
Oh yeah.
Because, like, Mork and Mindy, like, we didn't cover it because it's TV, but, like, it is like kind of how, like, a lot of people still, like, kind of have that base layer. It's like the rice in your Chipotle bowl.
Literally,
your understanding of Robin Williams.
Totally. Yeah. So approaching very serious roles like this with Robin are more challenging, which is why I think a part of the reason why I picked this movie. Because it's not my favorite Robin.
Yeah.
It'll never be my number one Robin.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think
because that brings up a really good thing is, like, that jumping into a serious Robin is slightly more challenging than some of the comedy Robins.
Mm.
And this is a good example of a much more, hi. She just jumps into your lap.
Hi, Piper.
Because some of the serious Robins, I would even include Good Will Hunting, even though it's like 1 foot in each.
Mm-hmm.
There's still like a little bit of that kind of madcap Robin energy. Mm-hmm. Like Dead Poets Society, he's doing bits.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Good Will Hunting, like he has moments of levity.
She hiss at you.
Yeah, she's in my lap hissing at me.
Oh, okay. I think she's like cool with pets, but then like she has like a tolerance of like, okay, that's enough.
That's too much pet.
Okay. Yeah.
Hands up. Yeah. Hands in the air.
But like,
I can get her off of you if you don't. That's fine. Okay. Okay. Just making sure.
This is, I think,
continue on. You're
I
sorry.
Honestly think the listener's favorite subplot of the show is every episode, when does the cat jump in and what havoc does it cause? If I were listening, that would be my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Jeff. What were you saying? Well,
I was just saying, like, this doesn't have any of that. There's no sequence in this where he's like, there's like one line where he makes a joke, and I was like, it was like water in the desert. It was like me, like, like with the shovel, like trying to suck it out of the oasis.
It's like that scene in the Walt Disney animation Dinosaurs where they're pushing on the sand and water starts filling
in.
Yeah,
exactly that.
Do you like that?
Even when he was with his kids in like the most fatherly way at the end of the film, I was waiting for this moment where he makes them laugh, and it never happens. Oh, it killed me.
Mm. Which, like, if that's your intent, then fine. Like, but don't cast Robin Williams.
Right?
Then.
Like, don't. You have a nuke. And why would you not use the nuke? Like, and that sounds messed up, actually. Now that the words come out of my mouth. But he's
why
just
would
so,
you not Morgan
so
on the podcast? If you have a nuke, why don't you use it?
I'm such a good social worker, I promise. But, I mean, like, he's just so efficient and good at that. And, like, why not even try? Give him a second.
What do you...
I was trying to pull this up right as you said. If you have a nuke, why not use it? This is Morgan listening to the show right now.
Gorenson in the brain. Let's go.
But like as we get more into Robin's later works within this time period, this is 94.
This is 94.
And so we're getting into that midpoint of the 90s where Robin's, I mean, he's always kind of been like a blockbuster actor, but now since he's just got it, like, as we said last week, Mrs. Doubtfire, I think in the stretch of Robin's entire career, Mrs. Doubtfire is his highest grossing movie that he's like a lead actor in.
Makes sense.
And Jumanji, even though that's going to be a movie we cover in a few weeks, that's a movie that also critically doesn't do well, but because it's got Robin, it makes a lot of money and so on and so forth. And we're getting to this point with Robin's career where it's funny that we mentioned it's like one of the weaknesses of Robin early on was that he thought he was the missing ingredient.
Yeah.
And that's where we get like Survivors, World According to Gar, Best of Times, those kind of flops that don't quite do very well, but it's because of Robin's like, oh, people, I'm in this movie to make it good. How do I make it good? It's be me, be funny Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're slowly starting to morph into the reverse of that problem where it's like, yes, I am the missing part of that movie because I'm a very popular actor. A lot of people will come see me just because they'll come see me, whether the movie's good or not good, having my name attached to that alone. And we're going to start to see, I think, because I mentioned this last week, but this is sort of the first, epitome of this whole thing is that Robin is going to start having some diminishing returns on his like fame capital.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a very good milestone movie to cover in a perfectly displayed like time right after his highest grossing movie. We talk about Being Human, which is like, Robin wants to do something to kind of keep him in sort of the fray of like, no, I'm a serious actor. I'm not just a blockbuster guy. And then it completely flops.
Absolutely.
Like this movie, I think when it first came out, it made $5 million worldwide.
Yeah.
On a $40 million budget.
Huge flop. Mega flop.
It just in the US and Canada was $1.5 million. Huge, massive flop. I think it's like one of Bill Forsythe's last movies he ever made.
Yeah, makes like one more after this.
Yeah. Gregory's,
he's still alive.
Gregory's Two Girls.
Ouch.
I think this movie kind of goes unscathed for Robin's career, though, because Doubtfire is still like out in theaters. Mm-hmm. It's the whole talk of the town. So this doesn't really hurt Robin all that much. But
I think it doesn't hurt because nobody knows about it.
Like, right, like, that's the thing.
Nobody's like, aware this exists.
Nobody's aware this movie exists. No, but it is like a good sort of cap mark of like, okay, starting from here, we're going to start to see like movies that are coming out that are on the backs of Robin Williams, and they may do pretty well. I think Jumanji is a really good example of that. That it makes money just because Robin's in it.
Did The Birdcage do well financially?
I believe The Birdcage.
Birdcage did do well financially. That one is more of its own kind of
Birdcage
island.
Birdcage makes almost $200 million on a 30 budget.
Yeah,
I didn't realize he was in Tu Wong Fu. Are you all covering that?
Yes.
Yes.
Why did I not pick that? I love that movie.
Oh,
he's in one scene of it.
Yeah, he's uncredited from what I'm seeing.
He like he's like the New York like club owner who like gets them the trades their plane tickets for the car tickets.
I'm surprised you know that much about it. I haven't even seen it yet.
Music Box is doing a show, a Tu Wong Fu showing soon.
Are they?
Oh.
Yeah, I believe so. It's part of their queer cinema series.
It's
not rated Q though.
It's not rated Q and it's not Safapalooza.
It might be Safapalooza.
Is it Safapalooza?
It might be.
Safapalooza is like one of the great names.
They're crushing it. Safapalooza is crushing it too.
Do you see they're adding a third screen?
Music Box?
You may have known about that for a while now.
Ooh, Morgan had all the insider scoops about
local
Chicago.
One of my besties was a manager there for a long time.
That's awesome.
That's been in the works for a while.
Oh, where are they going to put the third screen?
In like the vacant storefronts next to it.
They bought it. Yeah, they're just extending it.
And they're just going to add a little like, you know, a hallway inside.
Behind like where the small screen is, that little space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so cool.
It's a great idea.
It'll be great. And it's going to be 115 seater. Mm-hmm. So it'll be like a mid-size screen.
Nice.
With the big and the small one.
Because how many seats is in that smaller screen?
75.
I know. Yeah, it's like pretty 70, small.
Yeah. It's like pretty small.
The only reason I know this, because I don't go to the Music Box that often, is because I was on a TV show that filmed a few scenes of the Music Box. Mm-hmm. So I saw like pretty much all the up and down.
Yeah, all the inner workings.
All the inner workings of it. We put our own projector like next to their main projector, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was like where I got to like the full tour of the Music Box.
I worked the Hill House screenings as one of the extras in those early days when they had like actual like audience interaction and people who were planted. I was one of the planted people. And I got to go up in like where the seats are up with stairs, and it was, you know, filled with mold and stuff. It was great.
Asbestos. We love to be filled with mold.
It was great. Yeah. I mean, it's just so old and delightful back there. And like seeing the ins and outs was
the Music Box is, and I'm glad we're saying this on this episode of Being Human, but the Music Box is like a treasure of Chicago.
It's the greatest place.
It
genuinely makes me happy when I'm there.
Like a historically, like what?
It is a historical landmark.
Landmark?
Okay. It has been deemed a historical landmark.
I was wondering if they had like the historical landmark protections and all that stuff about it. So, but that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Special place if you're ever visiting.
Yeah. Go to Music Box.
Yeah. Go to the Music Box in Chicago. It's a great theater.
I think we should
probably just like start talking about the caveman scene. Like, or did we kind of already?
We
do
kind
the
of already.
happens in it
at the very, very beginning.
Yeah, we start with a story. This is the essence of.
Oh my god, the fucking narration.
A story starts with a character, and a character is who we're with right now.
I want to throw up.
Yeah. Do you think it was like tongue in cheek for Forsythe to do this because he didn't ask for this narration?
He does disown this like the main cut of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm guessing
Warner Brothers was just like, it looks like Teresa Russell is the storyteller, which is very funny.
I think they just did it without Bill.
I think they probably just, put it on without him. And he's like, I'm done. He didn't Alan Smithy himself, but.
Do you think he David Finchered himself? Alien 3,
David
Alien
Finchered 3, I think he probably Alien David Finchered himself.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, keep my name on it, but like, I disown it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Warner Bros. Probably just brought her in and had her do that. Yeah.
It's the fact that Wikipedia calls Being Human a 1994 comedy drama.
That's crazy.
Where is the comedy?
At no point did I laugh.
Yeah.
Comedy drama film.
Turturro did make me laugh a few times.
Turturro,
I thought his character was
very
fantastic.
Funny.
He's so funny in this.
Here's what happens in the caveman. I want to get over the caveman so we can start talking about Turturro.
I love it. Let's go.
So the caveman sequence is just like Robin Williams. He's a caveman and he goes out with his kids, or he leaves his kids at home and he goes and he finds another group of cavemen led by Robert Carlyle coming to his territory. And he's like, and he goes back to his family and says, run. Mm-hmm. And his wife's like, let's take this way. And he's like, no, this way.
Listen to women.
And because listen to women. And because he heads up the hill, she can't catch up and his family is like abducted. But then he's spared like, because he has like a rock statue. And the other cavemen are like, shit, this is like...
Must be a god.
He must be a god, but we'll take his kids. And then they leave and he's just like, oh, that sucked. And then it's like...
This is a disaster.
And then it's like, we jump to ancient Rome.
Well, no, the thing is, there's a scene where he's running at them, throwing rocks, going, mine. And if you Google YouTube videos of this film, first thing that comes up for some reason.
Is that
and
clip?
It's like the most unimpressive clip.
Yeah,
I can never imagine.
It's devastating for your ability to watch this movie if you click on that clip and you're like, well, I am not going to watch the rest of that.
Yeah. I would give the kids back out of pity. Like, really? That's your best effort?
It'd be
just
like,
take
if they're going to grow up to be like this guy, just like send him back.
This is Robin like throwing the rocks. Yeah.
Good.
So.
But we jump to ancient Rome. Where now his name is now Hector, the name he keeps for the remainder.
Mm-hmm.
And I did Google what is Hector's origin as a name, and it is Greek. So they got a point for that.
Yeah, they got something right.
But he is a slave to a foolish master, Lucinius, played by the one and only John Turturro. And here we are back to Turturro talk.
The toots. Time for the toots.
That's crazy.
Very good.
But the thing about Turturro, when's he bad?
That's a good point.
He like brings this movie up a whole ass half star at minimum to me.
Oh my God, this scene where he's like running to stab himself.
Yeah.
Cracking up. That is the comedy part to me.
When he like, because he's in debt to a bunch of creditors and they're basically like, hey, so the only way you get out of this is you kill yourself.
Happens.
And I like when he walks and he's got a big smile and he's like, we figured it all out. I just got to kill myself.
And you got to come with me.
And you're going with me because it would look really bad if I died without my slave dying too. And
like
Robin is like, why do I have to be in on this? Robin does play him like a fiddle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Turturro is such a good bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
Like I said, when's he bad?
The makeup they put on him is so silly. He looks so bad.
Insane. Like, you look at the run of his career, and, like, he is terrifying in, like, Spike Lee movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's usually playing, like, kind of a specter of evil.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
In this and Transformers, he's a perfect bumbling idiot. In his work with the Coen brothers, he manages to be, like, the perfect Coen protagonist and also a bumbling idiot in a lot of their other films. I just think, like, he's, like, such an undersung hero of cinema.
Yeah.
He's always good. He's always locked in. I haven't watched Severance, but it's my understanding he's pretty good in it.
He's really good. And it's almost disappointing, not to say that his performance is disappointing, but it's disappointing to see him get his oats now in like mass culture through it because he has such a nice resume behind him. But he's very, very good in Severance.
Yeah, like I'm looking at his... he's in one video game, I'd like everyone to know, is Cars 2. He plays Francesco Bernoulli in the Cars 2 video game.
I was there day one.
His only video game credit.
Amazing.
But like, as I was watching this movie last night, former guest of the show, Mark Tilly, was also weirdly watching Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just texting me throughout it. And I was just like, Turturro, in both these movies.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Y'all cycles are synced.
We are. I think
Turturro cycles.
He was just texting me insane quotes from that movie last night. Just in case anyone was curious about lines from Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
You know where we've also talked about Turturro in the past of the show, right, Jeff?
When have we talked about Turturro? We definitely have.
But you can do a Turturro season next.
We've definitely talked about
He was also keeping tabs about how many times 21 guns played in that movie. Like, there were at least four times.
Glad someone's doing the hard work.
But we have covered him in one of our previous seasons.
I believe it.
I'm just trying.
Did we do Turturro talk then?
We did a little bit of Turturro talk, but really sick.
Speaking of names, I like to sing
it. Oh, it's very quiet. Shit.
He's in Monkey Bone. He's the monkey.
Oh, I haven't seen Monkey Bone.
It's like kind of a mess, but like he is the voice of Monkey Bone in Monkey Bone.
The titular monkey.
The titular monkey.
Yeah, the titular monkey and monkey.
He was also Mr. Deeds.
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah, he's in Mr. Deeds. He's in.
So we've now covered.
I think our third Totoro.
Y'all are fated to cover a Totoro.
We should do
fated to cover Totoro.
Sir, I'm gonna be straight. We should just do a Totoro season. We get to talk about four Transformers.
We just like the gear shift right here. We've
covered him in a John Travolta one too.
Which one?
The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Oh, he's in that movie.
He's Lieutenant Vincent Caminetti.
Of course he is.
New York.
All right, everybody, tune in next July for Totoro talk of the next season of Travolting.
I seriously am like shocked like to discover now that we have done one Totoro in every single season of the show.
Yes.
Did y'all know his daughter is like a big time comic editor too?
Really?
His family is so cool.
God,
this
damn.
Is a complete sidetrack. This is what you get when you book someone with ADHD.
No, this Totoro is fantastic.
Holds dual Italian and American citizenship.
That's so lit.
That's great. That's good for him.
I think we do have to cover
I think
him.
We have to cover Totoro, right?
What was the name of the podcast that you like
Totoro
mentioned?
Totoro Talk.
Totoro Talk?
Yeah.
That's
called
it's easy.
It's like,
you got to get more clever than that.
Is it a little too easy?
What do you want to call it? The Turtley Club?
I think y'all need to be nominated for Bobbin for Robin. That is such a good one. Nominated for something.
Thank you.
I like that name a lot.
Morgan, thank you.
Shake this hand.
Someone says the truth.
I think it's great. It's clever. I'm engaged.
Yeah, because we're Bobbin
for Robin.
Stuart didn't like Robin for Robin.
I don't like Bobbin for Robin.
You got to get in the freaking apple tank and bob for those.
It's better than some of the other ideas that
were pitched to us.
Wait, what were the other ideas? Have y'all gone through this?
Cole Bradley wants us to do Robin the Grave.
Wants us to do Robin the Grave.
I'm like, no.
Is it because he's dead?
Yes, right.
Is it because he's dead?
Right. But we just couldn't do it's like Williams. Like, Walking with Williams, Wednesdays with Williams,
and Waltzing.
The Williams Waltz.
No, that you could conceivably make that about anybody named Williams.
True.
Bobbin for Robin is kind of like undeniably.
You could call it Robin's eggs.
Robin's egg, I think, was floated at some point.
Interesting.
I think it was too.
Robin's nest was floated.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I've warmed up to Bobbin for Robin. Don't get me wrong. I've warmed up
cute.
To it.
I like it.
So with the amount of Spike Lee, Coen Brothers, and Michael Bay movies we get to talk about with Totoro kind of elevates him immediately for me.
Mm-hmm. Did you see I changed the name of one of the other podcast ideas you had on our master roster?
I did not.
Okay.
Oh, I see it now. Very good.
Right? I think that's better.
That is better.
Are these future podcasts?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think this one we are going to do that person after this, though, right?
I think it's a good idea.
I think.
Yeah.
I know.
It is your call, but I think it's a very good idea. And so Totoro has to kill himself and his slave at the same time. A normal thing.
Regular.
And I want to just hype up Totoro, but at the same time, like, all that there is to this is he goes home and is like, here's a knife. I will stab you first. And Robin's like, well, can you free me first so I can die a free man? Mm-hmm. Turner's like, yes. So he writes him a little note.
Laughs him off, too. That's
like,
hilarious.
Here, you're free. This is a good idea. Now we kill ourselves. And then, he accidentally just trips and stabs himself in the heart and dies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Robin absconds with his other slave, who he loves.
Mm-hmm.
And
who's not his wife, because he has a wife and kids.
It's like a concubine type deal.
It's the thing of, like...
And it leads into the next story.
Right.
Does have a mistress in that story.
Yeah, yeah.
But because they abscond.
Father making a mistake. Yeah,
they abscond onto the ship and the ship takes off. And then we cut to the next period. But I'm just like, if we're going to, recast the other roles,
mm-hmm.
because Totoro's essence in theory goes into Vincent D'Onofrio,
mm-hmm.
and his lover's essence in theory goes into whomever is playing his lover in the Scottish Highlands section.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why are we not recasting Williams? Or why are these not the same actors?
Mm-hmm.
I think you kind of got to pick a lane between these two.
Exactly.
Because that Cloud Atlas, what makes it good is that it is consistently the same actors in every iteration, mm-hmm. going through character arcs.
Yeah. Yeah. We in Scotland now.
Because then we cut to
TikTok dance
the Scottish Isles. It's the real Mackenzie's version of Scotland the Brave. I love it.
Gets my Scottish Hector, blood he's boiling. He's like a former crusader, right? And he's heading home to Scotland.
Because Vincent D'Onofrio plays a priest.
Yes, Vincent D'Onofrio plays a priest who's like, here's my plan. We all are supposed to be going to the kingdom of heaven, right? And they're like, yeah.
That's the plan.
And he's like,
that's the whole idea.
We all are celibate for 50 years, we'll all die. And there just won't be any of us, and we'll all be in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And Ram's like, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, a lot of his arc in this movie is I will pork you in any lifetime.
Yeah.
Because he does that.
In every lifetime, I would pork you.
Sorry, that's such a heinous word to use,
no,
but I won't take it back.
No, it is the correct word to use. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Very good.
I've journeyed across an oceans of time to pork you.
Very good.
So,
because there's this.
I forgot I to bring up what, something that
she,
I really want to bring up.
She's Italian because she's speaking.
Yeah, he like runs. Yes. He's in the cart with a lady, an Italian lady, and she's like, "Mamma mia, I must get home to my Italian." And he's like, "I find you really attractive. I'm gonna go with you."
Yep. Even though he does have a wife and kids,
he has a wife and kids at home. Yeah. And so he goes with her the whole time. She's like, "Spaghetti, mozzarella, ravioli."
He's like, "I simply don't understand."
And he's like,
"But I'm here for the sauce."
He's like, "Brother, this guy stinks."
And he's like, "I just don't understand what you're saying." She says, like, "Mamma mia, put the meatball on it."
Oh gosh!
And so he goes back to her family. This is like the seventh time you've done this is a disaster clip. It's great.
Of all the films to do it for, this is the best one.
Yeah.
And he gets there, and the kids are like, "Mamma mia, that's the joy." And he's like,
who's gonna bring it up first?
Just yeah, you got it first.
It's a foot race.
And he's like, "I can't be here." And then he like eats like seven pasta dishes. Mm-hmm. And
I'm gonna carbo load
some bruschetta. And he's like, "I cannot stay here. I'm abandoning my family. I must turn around.
I've decided that what I've done is wrong."
And there's like Chef Boyardee is there, and he's like, "They're just kind of going this way, buddy."
Okay, but anyway. The pizza messages in Spider-Man 2 were actually kind of hard. Okay,
they were crazy. Okay,
very
so
tense.
He like goes back to the river and gets in a little boat and is going to head home to his family in Scotland. That's where we cut into the next one. Mm-hmm. I forgot to tell a story I wanted to tell.
Tell a story.
About Totoro. We're going to go back to him for a second.
Circling back.
This is like one of my all-time favorite behind-the-scenes stories from a movie. And it is from the aforementioned Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, Stuart, you've seen Transformers too. Morgan, have
I
you?
I have not.
You, probably
good.
Good.
Yeah, my best friend recently watched all of the Transformers movies with her husband when they were tripping on mushrooms in the PNW.
I'm sure that was a game changer.
Oh, she loved it.
Yeah.
And she's trying so hard to convince me, and I still
I do think that they're like kind of incredible in like a weird
the Transformers movies.
Yeah, like in a weird dirtbag auteurist way.
Exactly.
Dark Side of the Moon's where they go to the moon to find the Decepticon base, right?
Yes. Okay, Dark of the Moon is the one where the seed is the fourth. Anyway.
Hold Totoro, on. Please just give me like a 1 minute, Jeff, to be like,
"The seed." Yes.
Transformers 2, the end of the movie reveals that the thing about these movies is they're about robots who fight other robots.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it should be that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that they're all about like weird, like government conspiracies and signal intelligence.
Oh, that makes sense.
Sector 7. Yep.
That makes a lot
but
of sense.
But the second one, the reveal at the end is that the pyramids of Giza are actually a cover up
for
a sun harvesting machine. Normal, but the
Sarah, put the matrix in my chest.
Yeah,
Sam, put the cube in my chest, Sam.
But the end of the movie is like they have to stop the Decepticons on the pyramids of Giza from turning on the sun harvester that's been there.
Yep.
And so Totoro is like his character's like climbing the pyramid,
right?
Do
they blow them up?
They do blow them up.
Fuck yeah.
And like
that's sick.
The story is that Totoro, when he showed up to set that day, it's like he's brought to set and he gets out and he's standing at the base of the pyramids of Giza.
They are actually in Giza.
In actual Giza.
Wow.
And one of the like the great the one seven wonders of the world, one of the most beautiful, like impressive achievements built on slave labor, but like and he just like broke down into tears about like my career has brought me here and this is a place I never thought I'd be. Just a boy from the Bronx.
Yeah.
I'm here getting to experience, this because of my career, and this is so beautiful. And he has this very emotional moment. And then they're like, okay, we're going to shoot the scene. And the scene is him standing on the Pyramid of Giza underneath this giant robot with a pair of wrecking balls just clanking together as its testicles. Yep. And he goes, I'm directed below the enemy scrotum. And I just think that it's really beautiful that he has that wonderful,
he takes
like
a second.
He
to
has
take
that
the
like
beat
my
and,
career
like,
has brought me to this beauty in my life that I never thought I'd achieve. Enemy scrotum.
Two wonders of man, right there.
I am directly below enemy scrotum.
How could someone approve this script?
Michael Bay on cocaine.
No, that's the thing. Yeah. That's the one that doesn't have a script.
Right,
because
during
the writer's strike in 2009, they have 2 weeks before the strike starts to write the script. So they cram together like a loose idea and hand it off to Michael Bay. And they're like, we can't help anymore. And so Michael Bay basically ad-libs the movie.
Amazing.
Which is why it's so cracked out.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I'm tired of making this robot movie. We're just going to have 10 minutes of like a conspiracy thriller about phones.
Wow.
And then he's like, I'm sick of that. We're just going to make a Shanghai action movie. And we're done. Petra, we're going to go in there and reveal that there's aliens underneath of it.
Of course there are. Absolutely.
But anyway, that was just a vital bit of Totoro context that I just always think about is the juxtaposition between the beauty of
it feels
his
like
moment.
The moment of silence before shooting the turtle scene. Before, it has the same energy.
Same energy as that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to being human. God help us.
God help us.
He's out of Scotland. He is now a Portuguese man aboard of. He's not even on the ship. The ship has crashed and sunk by the time we are catching up with them.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of Portuguese soldiers and they're all like kind of and refugees and they're like washing up on the shore of somewhere in Africa is my interpretation.
Yes.
Somewhere.
Somewhere.
It's like in the movies when it's like somewhere in Africa. And he's just like, they're washing up and Hector Elizondo is the captain. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, we got to find what we got. And we'll live.
We'll send out teams of
food
and water and all that stuff. They're essentially like creating a civilization there, right? Isn't that the whole bit?
They're like colonizing it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to
do. That is the bit. I don't think they hammered it in hard at all. This is also where the film started to lose me entirely.
Yes.
And I was looking at the Elden Ring game that my partner was playing and I was like, that just looks so much better.
Like
I want to look at that more than I want to look at this.
Here I am watching Robin Williams play a Portuguese man. All I want to do is play Cal Kestis traversing the galaxy.
Yeah.
And no, this is like a disaster, this section.
Yeah. It's
because
really
like
bad.
The same actress who plays his caveman wife is also there.
Yeah.
But
and he also has a slave.
Yeah. Yeah. They start he's building up his role in the world.
Yes.
He is more successful.
He's more successful.
Yeah.
But he's still making the same mistakes.
Over and over.
Ewan McGregor's in this chunk.
Ewan McGregor executes a dude.
I'll do it.
That's
his line.
That's his line.
You nailed it.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
They hang two dudes on a cross for like trying to steal food.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of sea otters.
And then a bunch of like, you know, African people come and find them and like, what's this all about?
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, oh, we will colonize them.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's quite truly all that happens.
I feel like maybe a lot of the 40 minutes that was cut from the section.
Yes.
Yeah.
It does feel so disjointed.
This has big like Ballad of Buster Scruggs energy.
Yes.
Where like the fourth section of that movie is like 40 minutes and the rest are like 20.
Yeah.
And like you really can feel like that there's something missing here. It just ended. I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
So he was just like hanging out on the beach for 20 minutes. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because we just suddenly cut to concrete jungle where dreams are made of. There's nothing.
I did feel so
much
so
crazy
as soon as
it.
I saw like the New York thing happening.
Yeah, it's just
like
New York, baby.
I need anything else other than this arc.
Yeah.
Baby. New York.
New York City. We got Lorraine Bracco.
Oh, yeah. Because it's him and Lorraine Bracco in a car.
Yes.
Right away, right? And
he's in a taxi.
Oh, no. He's in a taxi because a building that his name is on, like a toilet collapsed with a lady sitting on it.
Yep. It's definitely some scummy landlord shit, which is a nice arc coming away from being a colonizer. And now you're a landlord.
Yeah.
Like that did make sense. There are parts of this that make sense to me.
It's like well observed in a sense that would be like the modern iteration of like the colonizing Portuguese Renaissance sailor is the modern day landlord. It's like similar, you know, forms of exploitation. And yet, like, he's just like, oh, my name shouldn't be on this building. The toilet collapsed. It's like weird slapsticky bit with this lady like, oh, I'm sitting on the toilet. I fell through the floor.
Yeah, it's like, that is funny, but it's also a travesty.
Yeah.
It's like, that's really bad.
Because this is
like,
when William H. Macy just appears. Yeah, William H. Macy
shows up for one shot. And he's like, hey, it's me, William H. Macy. I'm your lawyer. I'm going to get this all squared
and
away for
you. And I also did put your name on that. You're right.
Yeah, I put your name on that. That wasn't a good idea on my part. But don't worry, I'm going to get it all squared away. And he goes inside the building. We never see him again.
That's it. William H. Macy, what a great actor.
Yeah, a great actor. Fabulous man. And then, like, so he goes to meet Lorraine Brock, who's like, what are you doing? I got to deliver all these flowers, and you're just holding me up from that. And he's like, I got to go meet my kids. He's like, okay, but if you deliver these flowers in my car, and I'm just going to stay here. And he's like, okay, I, Robin Williams, will do that. And then Roland Bracco gets out of the car, like, don't forget the flowers.
Also, like, I want to meet your kids.
I want to meet your kids. Yeah. Make them some Master Choli.
oh my God, Piper, calm down.
She's happy, kind of. I can't tell. Just let me know when you want me to stop.
That usually when she like perks up like that, that's like, okay, we're good.
Hands up.
We're good.
Yeah. I got the pets I wanted.
We're good. Yeah, and she wags her tail like that, like crazy. She just wants to lay on you. That's all.
But then, like, he drives and picks up his kids from his ex-wife.
Yes.
And they get in the car and they're like, this sucks. Weird, like, funny, like, connection with Mrs. Doubtfire here. They're very similar in energy.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're going to go to the beach house. And they're like, we don't like you, Dad. Everything he says, the kids are, the son's like, you suck, Dad.
And you eat like shit, Dad.
Yeah. You eat like slop.
You don't use kitchen towels, Dad.
It's deeply bizarre.
Yes.
This is so low energy for being a New York type scene. Because he gets
I'm so sorry. You can't mention New York and me not pull up the bacon pancake New York group. You heard this,
you know,
right?
Who wasn't making pancakes? This dad.
What is this?
He's never made pancakes for his kids ever.
All right, I'm surprised you've never seen that clip before.
I don't know what that is either.
You don't know what it is either. No? It's the Adventure Time Bacon Pancake song combined with New York. Yeah,
cute.
The end of Men in Black 3 when Will Smith returns to the modern timeline and starts playing Concrete Jungle, Where Dreams Are Made Of, as he's standing atop the Chrysler Building observing New York City. It's like a randomly beautiful scene that movie.
It is a beautiful city. Yeah.
We're like, oh, that was nice. That's a nice way to end this movie.
Anyway,
he's at the beach house and his kids don't like him.
Hate his guts. He went to prison.
Who hasn't? And they're like, why weren't you there for my first birthday? And he's like, I was in jail.
I was literally in jail.
And it's like, it's like played like a reveal that he's telling them this, but then they're both like, yeah, we didn't, mom said we couldn't visit you in jail. And it's like, wait, so they knew he was in jail. Which way are we playing this right now?
The mom is definitely like the spirit of the wife that he betrayed in every lifetime. And she's finally like not with him.
She's finally like, I'm not with you anymore, but I'm going to send my kids with you to a remote beach house.
Which, as we found out in the first story, turned out real well for them.
It didn't go well last time they tried.
That's where, like, before the movie ends, he's looking over the horizon and he sees, like, Viking ships. It's the same, like, caveman coming to steal his family again.
I will steal your kids in any lifetime.
I really enjoy the Wikipedia synopsis for this storyline. Hector is a modern man in New York, paying the consequences of cowardly indecision and gaining the strength to address the children who he lost lifetimes ago. He is joined in this life by his master slash slave slash friend slash soulmate.
Yep.
And ex-wife Janet. And her husband slash raider from lifetimes past. They support him.
So they actually will kidnap his family.
They support him.
But they are people who are trying to find their own way as in past lives. I'm like, who wrote this? That's like, crazy.
Someone really loved this movie.
Yeah, someone like cared deeply about being Bill Forsythe.
I have to fix this.
Reveal yourself. Yeah. What if Bill Forsyth,
this
like,
article was edited by a man named B. Forsyth.
B. Forsyth.
The user B. Forsyth. Holy hell.
I'm going to go to the talk page for this Wikipedia and see if they're arguing about it. Someone's just like, I removed the following sentence. This is only true, accurate description of what every person is doing every second of their life. Because frankly, I don't know where that came from. A bunch of like, someone's just yelling about how he's not a Celtic. anyway. That's the end of the movie is like, Heenus gets finally reconciled on a beach underneath the Milky Way galaxy. It's like kind of this like, CGI like Scott.
Yeah,
starscape.
It was distractingly fake. You know,
it's funny because I watched this immediately concurrent with an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation,
mm-hmm.
Which had a very similar sequence where like they like went to a part of the galaxy no one has been to before, as mm-hmm. they do in most episodes.
Yes, yeah.
And like they opened up the view screen, it had almost the exact same starscape from the end of Being Human. I was like, wait a second,
this could be the same.
Wait
thing.
One goddamn
the
arrows
are overlapping here.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second, what's going on here?
I want to read a line from a Entertainment Weekly article review for this movie.
Get it.
Because it's the most like dated line I can ever imagine. This was published May 20th, 1994 after the movie was released. Like a traffic accident or a Dan Quayle presidential bid, the spectacle of a truly great director making a truly bad movie exerts a certain disreputable intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first mm-hmm. line. I love it. It's so good. Like a Dan Top Quayle cool. presidential
so
bid.
So relevant to 2025.
Yeah.
Dan that Quayle. One held up.
Yeah. Is Dan Quayle still kicking?
Do you know Dan Quayle's from my hometown?
I didn't know this. You've told me this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still kicking.
Where's your hometown?
Huntington, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, you are from Indiana. I'm also from Indiana.
Trump Land America. I'm
that's
shake
exactly
your hand.
It. I'm going to shake your hand.
I'm going to shake your hand.
Yeah, I'm from Rensselaer, if you even have heard of it.
What area?
It's between Chicago and Indy.
Okay.
I was born in Lafayette.
Gotcha, Lafayette. Northwest region. Yes. Fort Wayne. Yes. Northeast region.
Yes.
You're the Illinois side. I'm on the Ohio side.
I'm still considered a region rat, like right on the line.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No, I was, my backyard was next to the trailer parks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of Indiana.
Yeah. Anywho, back home again. I don't have anything else to say about this
No,
movie.
I mean, it's like, it's a nice ending in theory and in concept.
Morgan, what if there's a remake Even of this movie called Being a Hoosier?
Being
Hoosier. It's like a different lifetime you'd experience in Indiana, where it's like, God. I had a farm, and then I was on a basketball team. And then I worked in a factory in Gary.
Oh, no. Okay, but actually, why am I... Why do I want to make this movie?
It can
Being
exist.
Hoosier.
And then I live in a trailer park and I don't have any of my teeth because of the problems that exist.
Because they got rid of the fluoride.
Yeah, the fluoride.
They removed the fluoride from the water.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Benny died from fentanyl last year. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Nope, that's how a lot sorry. Of it's going. It's, you know, we can talk about the systems in Indiana that are letting this happen.
Mm-hmm. Anywho.
What else is there to say?
What else is there to say about being...
To being too human.
Being a human.
Being too human.
Because there's being a human, there's being too much of a human.
Yeah,
I think that's what the sequel's trying
like
to get at.
He wasn't enough of a human.
Yeah, he was like, it's like he could be human enough.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I think a lot of being a human is finding courage, and he really doesn't.
No,
you know, he finds the courage to tell his kids, hey, maybe I fucked up like 7 lifetimes ago.
I just feel like it's another film where we give the guy the bare minimum and give him generations to reach the bare minimum, and he still doesn't.
Yeah.
Really.
But boy, isn't he a great protagonist there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Robin should have been cast as this, but...
Robin is a massive mistake of this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Amongst his other mistakes. The only like lasting legacy of this movie is that it's Hugh McGregor's first role. Like,
that's true. And the turts.
And the turts is good as hell in it.
Mm-hmm.
To be clear.
We talked a lot of turt today.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
We wanted to talk about the interesting parts of this film.
I think if we did Totoro, we should just actually copy and paste this episode. Just release it the second time.
Honestly.
For Totoro.
Change the intro.
Yeah. I can't believe like each season we did one Totoro movie. That's cool.
This comes out the exact same year as Shallow Grave for Ewing. That's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I forgot that Robin Williams wasn't Jack, and that was directed by Coppola.
Yeah.
But that's for later.
That's going to be like the ultimate Icarus flying too close to the sun episode of this show.
For he's Robin or for Coppola?
All of the above.
All of the above.
That's going to be like a 7-hour episode of us dissecting what happened here.
I'm just sorry, just so everyone sees the poster.
Oh, I've seen them. Stuart, I am very aware of the poster for Jack. I'm very aware of what that movie's about.
Who is your guest?
Haunts me in my sleep.
I think it's Brian doing that one.
Oh,
right?
Fun.
Brian DeLisi.
Brian DeLisi, yeah.
Shouts out to Brian DeLisi. Thank you for DPing all of my student films.
Hell yeah, the Brian DeLisi.
The real one.
Jack will be an episode where we have to like not cite Tropic Thunder for every single line.
That's fair.
That's gonna be the bit that we're
also Astrid, Brian's fiance, also Trina, also deep into Trina films. Yeah. They're both amazing.
Yeah, they're
both
incredible people. Mm-hmm. The kindest souls.
Shout out to you guys.
We love them.
They actually listen to the show. So shout out Brian and Trina.
Hi, Brian and Trina.
I know we were shit talking the whole time.
Yeah.
Brian,
yeah, we're
Trina,
gonna mute it right
today,
now.
You guys suck. Horrible. No,
I could never do that.
No.
I don't even think I have like enough. I don't have fodder to do that with.
No, the only entities and things I talk trash about are
the entity
is
Ethan. The entity,
the
Ethan.
Entity, Ethan.
Ethan, the entity has predicted that you would do this exact scenario. How can you know that the entity did not know you were going to do
this? Is the entity in question White Castle?
The entity,
because I hate White Castle.
Ethan.
That's
Ethan.
That's the entity.
Ethan.
I will.
Ethan, the entity.
The entity.
All right, enough. Enough.
What if the entity predicted this exact scenario?
Okay.
What if the entity predicted that you would predict its exact scenario?
Morgan, any final thoughts on being human?
That is every line of dialogue from the first hour of the new Mission Impossible, is them just saying, the entity has predicted your prediction.
I want to see it. I will see it soon. My final thought is that I should see Mission Impossible Reckoning. I should just do it.
Yeah.
It's worth it in IMAX.
And that is a better use of 2 hours of my time.
Yeah, the first
this movie was 2 hours long.
Yeah, that's a major problem.
Yeah.
Still too long.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how you watch a movie like Mrs. Doubtfire and like it's 2 hours long. You're like, that's a good length.
Yeah.
And you watch this and it's 2 hours and you're like, what are we doing?
Jesus. We're still on the beach.
Cut, cut, cut.
Snip, 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 snip.
Dude, the film is just the beach from old.
Yeah. What if a beach made you old?
Exactly.
Honestly, the best pitch for a movie. What if a beach made you old?
That movie's perfect.
That movie is actually great.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot about like mid-sized sedan.
Mid-sized sedan.
That's such a good character.
It's such a great name.
Oh, a tragic character too.
Very good.
That's the most like middle-aged Philadelphian dad naming a rap star in a movie.
Because it was.
Yeah, and then Lady Raven. Like is the names he's giving these pop stars is incredible.
Uh-huh. Comic book characters.
I feel like my essence talking more about this movie is going old on the beach.
Yeah, you're turning. You call me Gael Garcia Bernal because I'm turning old.
Oh, God. Well, thank you all so much for listening to this episode on Being Human. Morgan, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, happy to be here.
For a very exciting episode to talk to us about.
There are more exciting ones.
We'll have you back for Death 2.
Two death, two smoochy.
Two death, two smoochy.
Yeah.
And we'll be excited to have you back on for that one. If you like this episode, please remember to rate, review, comment, like, and subscribe, whatever platform you're listening on. Remember, always on a flurry of other platforms. Spotify, Apple, YouTube. You Google us, you'll find us on something. And join us all next week for In Search of Dr. Seuss.
That's going to be the next.
What did I say?
You said insert of Dr. Seuss.
Insert Dr. Seuss here.
Insert Dr. Seuss. In Search of Dr. Seuss next week. I'm sure that'll be an interesting episode. And then before we head up, Morgan, anything you want to plug? Anything you want to shout out? Anything? Do you got a YouTube channel or
I don't have anything.
Podcast yourself?
I'm pretty offline these days for the mental health and to not be a part of the horrible systems that be. But I will say a lot of stuff that used to be federally funded just lost all their funding. So if you have extra time, go to the food pantry. Maybe help out there. I'll plug that.
Hell yeah. And as always, special thanks to Michael Van Boden Smith for the theme music and Rebecca for the graphic design. See you guys all next week for Insert Dr. Seuss.
Insert Dr. Seuss.
Community is all we have right now. So,
that's true. That's so real.
Yeah. We are all human.
So let's do more at
being human.
Being human. Bye.
Sorry, wrong thing. There we go.